Welcome to the Creative Pursuit Podcast. In each episode, we chat with entrepreneurs and freelancers in the creative field. We dive into how they got started and how they grew their business to provide you with insights and motivation so that you too can pursue your creative passion. We believe you should enjoy the work you do and that the biggest challenge is to just get started. Check out our website, creativepursuit.co, for show notes and more info about the creatives featured in each episode. Now, here's your host, Darren Young.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to the Creative Pursuit Podcast. I'm Darren Young, and I'm a web designer, videographer, and podcaster. I am also the owner of Mix Media, which is a multimedia agency that helps entrepreneurs develop and elevate their presence online. Today I'm talking with Sam Malik. Sam is the owner of Malik Media, which is a marketing and design agency. But the most incredible part of Sam's story is that he started Malik Media at age 17. Sam is currently a freshman in college, and in this episode, he shares his story about how he started his agency while still being a student in high school. He is also launching an online platform called MeLens, which is a way for freelance creatives and employers to connect. It aims to simplify the communication process and allows employers to receive great work while helping freelancers get a fair wage. Let's get to it. Welcome to the Creative Pursuit Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm sitting here with Sam Malik of Malik Media. How's it going?
Doing well. How are you doing this morning?
Not too bad.
Good.
So first, Sam, tell us about Malik Media. What is it?
Sure, man. So Malik Media is a creative media and marketing firm. You know, we do a lot of different things. So me personally, I'm a graphic designer, I'm a web designer and photographer. But then we also have people that do video production, audio, social media management, branding and marketing strategy. So kind of anything in that creativity and digital marketing realm.
And also tell us about your background. What are you doing right now?
Sure. So, you know, my background is kind of interesting, actually. And I tell people I fell into this business almost by accident. So that takes me back two places, really. So I served on a lot of different boards and kind of positions for nonprofits before. And what I always realized working for those nonprofits is, and I started to realize this more as I worked with entrepreneurs, is that nonprofits and entrepreneurs can be similar in that they're typically really good at what they do, but they don't know how to communicate it to the public, right? They don't know how to make other people know about it, and they don't really know how to brand themselves correctly. So serving in those nonprofit roles, I always kind of saw it as, you know, when I was younger, I loved making flyers and stuff in Microsoft Word and just doing, you know, little easy things like that. And so I was like, hey, you know what? I can make a logo for this, you know, nonprofit, or I can help them make a website because they're not digital. And then the more and more I started doing that, I kind of fell in love with it and started teaching myself more with all the resources that are available now for free. And then, you know, from there, people just kind of started asking me to do those things for their businesses. And that's kind of how Malik Media formed. So that's why I say it was by accident. When I was doing all of it, I didn't really see Malik Media forming, but then it did. And, you know, it's worked out well.
So you kind of just got into it. You didn't have a big master plan to make this media company or anything?
Absolutely not. Not at all. And I really had no foresight of it at all. I always saw myself doing something creative, maybe advertising like down the road. But I never really saw Malik Media. But it's funny because, you know, now that I'm owning and operating it and looking back on it, it's like, okay, I could always have seen myself being an entrepreneur based on the other jobs and stuff I worked and the kind of person I am. It's very fitting, you know, but I didn't foresee it necessarily, at least as it is now.
So I think it's important to note, so you're a freshman in college right
yep.
now.
Mm-hmm.
You just graduated high school earlier this year.
Yep, that's right.
I'm just impressed and amazed that
you've
already been had your own business for a year now?
Yep, almost a year. It'll be a year in February.
I mean, when I was a freshman in college, I wasn't close to thinking about having my own business or...
And that's what I say, you know, it just kind of happened. And, you know, I guess it happened to be a combination of, I almost say the right place at the right time, but not in the way that people typically think of it. I'm talking about it generationally almost. Like when you were in high school, you didn't have YouTube available.
True, yeah.
And for me, you know, or back to you. So, you know, say you wanted to learn web design when you were in high school. Mm-hmm. Well, if you wanted to do that, you had to find an experienced web designer to sit down and teach you, right?
Well, first of all, when I was in high school, there was
exactly no such thing as web design. Exactly. It's not even what it is now. And so, okay, let's call it graphic design or photography, right? You had to find an experienced professional, or you just sit down and pick up a book, right? And read through a book or a trade periodical to teach you how to do it. For me, I can go and, typically in a matter of 5 minutes, pull up a video on YouTube that is specific to the model of my camera, answering the exact question that I'm asking,
Yeah, everyone can learn things really quickly nowadays.
Absolutely. I mean, knowledge is just so available, especially in the creative fields, in a way that it wasn't before. And it's beautiful too, because you have these people who, they get paid to give professional level, creative content completely for free, because, maybe they feature a sponsor's product or something like that. So, I've been a huge beneficiary of that. Back to the topic of, starting a business in high school. For me, I've had so much information available to myself.
So before we continue on, I think it would be good to note, so you're also helping with the TEDx New Albany.
Yep.
What was your involvement with the organization?
So right now I'm actually no longer with TEDx New Albany. I'm with TEDx U Cincinnati because I graduated, but I was the co-executive director and director of speaker development for TEDx New Albany, co-director of speaker development. And so with that, we really kind of built that organization from the ground up. And that's where a lot of this kind of learning on the fly, creating logos for nonprofits kind of thing came about. We had already been an organization before TEDx New Albany was TEDx New Albany. We were TEDx Youth at NAHS. And so I go into a whole talk about the TED world, but there are different level licenses. And essentially, we operated for 2 years as a really small kind of 100-person event, solely focused on students with student speakers. And then we decided in a matter of, 2 years that we wanted to take this thing and build it into something greater. And so in order to do that, we had to go from a budget of about $1,500 that was just being handed to us from our principal to a budget of around $30,000 with in-kind sponsorship and all these other kinds of things that we had never really gotten into before. And so, when we were going through that process of reaching out to big sponsors, if we came and handed them a Microsoft Word document and things that just looked crappy and thrown together and unprofessional, they would look at us and think, okay, this is not, why would I write a check for 10 grand and give it to these kids, really? I mean, we were 17, 18-year-olds coming and asking for large sums of money. So I realized, if we want to go and solicit these kinds of funds and treat ourselves like a professional organization, then we need to look like a professional organization. And I think that in many ways, that's a lesson for any kind of small business out there too. When you're starting and getting off the ground, if you want to look, like a professional company or like you've been doing it for a long time, you need to look like that. Your branding needs to be reflective of that. And so that's kind of where that all came about.
Just a quick question. So about that branding and getting things together, did you guys have other teachers helping you or mentoring you, or how did you figure this out?
In terms of, organizing the event as a whole, we had a few teacher mentors who were, they're pretty hands-off though. They gave us a lot of creative freedom. But from a design standpoint, there was really no guidance at all. We didn't have a specific graphic design teacher, anyone who was sitting there helping or overseeing. So it was really me going and putting stuff together. And then there were a few other people on the team as well who used, I love the Adobe Creative Suite. I was experienced in it, so I like using Illustrator, Photoshop, whatever, and InDesign. But some other people would use, available tools we have now like Canva, and they would go and throw together some really amazing things in 15 or 20 minutes because they had a good visual eye. And so, it wasn't just me from that standpoint, but it was a lot of us learning on the fly together.
So that's a good segue into the next topic I want to get into. How did you get involved in just graphic design, using software, using all the different gear? What led you to get into it in the first place?
Sure. So that's interesting. I guess I'll go kind of back to the way start. So before I even got started working, I told you a little bit about how I kind of was learning on the fly with these nonprofit organizations, helping brand them. But before I even kind of learned the tools to do that, at one point in my high school career, I think it was a freshman, I took an intro to Photoshop and digital photography course. And that was a semester-long course, so about 18 weeks. About half of it was spent on digital photography, and about half of it was learning, principles of Photoshop to apply to those photographs and stuff. So as I did that, and started playing around with Photoshop. It's funny because I always tell people, I like, when I took that class, I was always so stressed out. I was always like whispering to the kid next to me, like, what the hell is going on right now? I'm so behind. And I just wasn't really paying attention, didn't quite get it. Like, for me, the whole idea of layers was so confusing. And I didn't realize that that's how visual things were broken down at that time. It was like so mind-boggling to me.
So your other classmates at the time, were some of them already whizzes at it, or was everyone at the same level?
You know, a lot of them were probably at the same level because it was an intro class, but some of them, I would say they probably paid attention a little more than I did. But also on top of that, some people did have experience from like a brother or a sibling, or maybe they had a free trial version they'd played around with at some point. And so anyway, you know, through doing that, once I was finished with the class, I ended up saving up, buying my own DSLR because I just got really interested. I had always been interested in photography. I found it very fascinating. It's a really cool art because it's so versatile.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, you know, it's prevalent in absolutely everything. And so I just decided, you know, I'm going to buy an intro level DSLR. And then I, you know, got into the free version of Photoshop. Or I think my brother might have had a version that he purchased a while ago and started playing around with that and just kind of started teaching myself Photoshop a lot through YouTube and a lot through, and I think that any creative entrepreneur can sympathize with this, the whole fake it till you make it thing. I would have people come to me and ask me if I knew how to do things, and I'd shake my head and say, yeah, I know how to do that. I can do that.
and then you just watch a couple of tutorials and...
Exactly. And you figure it out on the fly. It might take you five times the time it would take someone who really knows how to do it, but after that, you do know how to do it, and you can start offering it to clients and whatnot. But that's really how I kind of got into the tool, was I went from Photoshop to then learning Illustrator, you know, and then learning kind of InDesign, and now I guess I dabble in Premiere and After Effects a little bit too, but you know, the big three are the ones I focus on: Adobe, Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign.
Was that the only class you had actually had formal training in?
Yeah, definitely. And again, it was very limited formal training, not at all to say that the teacher wasn't good, but it was, you know, it was an 18-week course.
Yeah, and it was still just an intro level
course. Exactly, yep.
Did your school offer any other classes, or was that like the only?
Yeah, they did offer one more. I want to say it was like a multimedia kind of course. I think it was, rather than semester long, it was about a year long, and it was kind of meant to build off of that intro to Photoshop and digital photography course. But at that time, I was really thinking that I was going to go into medicine. So I was very focused on packing my schedule with, you know, science classes and really heavy AP kind of course loads. So because of that, I couldn't take the other multimedia one that I wanted to. So I had to learn a lot of it outside.
So what I'm trying to do with this podcast is, I want to encourage other people to follow their passions in a creative field, because I was in a similar spot too. I was in an office job that I got completely out of it and now got back into it. And when I was away from it, I mean, I always thought it was really hard to get back into it. Like, oh, I'm so out of date. There's so many things I need to learn. So for someone else that's in a similar position, what are some things that you could recommend or help encourage them to just get started?
To just get started, yeah. So first, I'm going to start with the more like inspirational, not concrete things. And then I'll go into, okay, so here are some actual things you can do. So back to your point, this is something that as entrepreneurs you hear all the time, is just do it, just get started. And so I think to a point it starts to become cliche, and it can be one of those in one ear, out the other things. But I cannot agree with that statement more. It comes to a point in time where you really do just have to do it. Do you know who Casey Neistat is?
Yes.
Yeah. So
he got the big deal.
Exactly. With Beam, he just sold to CNN.
Yeah.
But I would watch some of his blogs every now and then, or vlogs, just because they were super interesting. But at one point, he was talking about Beam and how he started it. And he just literally pulled out a poster board, and he was like, and he drew on one end of the poster board, he's like, where you are now. And he was like, on the other end, it was like, your dreams are where you want to be. And he's like, you know what's in between? Actually doing it. What separates the people from getting here to here is actually going out and doing it. And so like, that was so simple, obviously, but just seeing that like illustrated on a poster board and just being like, damn, okay, you know, if I actually want to make something of Malik Media or this other startup I'm working on, I got to just sit down and start doing it, because it's either going to happen or it's not. But it's definitely not going to happen if I'm not the one making it happen, or someone else is going to take my idea and do it. So on that note, I really would say, I mean, if you're struggling with, you know, should I actually do it? just get started, and you'll find out from then a lot of it is improvising and playing as you go. But now more into the concrete stuff, I would say if you're at all interested in graphic design or digital photography or anything like that, my very first tip would be go and download the free trial of the Creative Suite. It's a month long. But I would say maybe even before you do that, kind of have an idea of how you want to use it, because it is only 30 days. So, and it's not one of those things where you can like undownload it and just put a new email address in, because believe me, I've tried that when I first started off, and you can't do that. So do that, or you know, if you're a student, take advantage of the resources you have by going to school, because oftentimes they might pay for your Creative Suite or they have computers that you can use it. But I would say do that. Download Illustrator and Photoshop, because those are the two, especially Photoshop, that will lay the groundwork for absolutely everything you do across the Creative Suite. If you can understand how layers work, mm-hmm. that will really be helpful to you. And so from there, I would say, you know, if you're interested in photography, at this point, rather than going and investing in a DSLR, if you feel like you're at that point and you have the resources to do it, then do it. But if you're not there yet and you don't really understand the differences and intricacies between all those cameras, just pick up your iPhone and start taking some cool shots. You know, one of the first things that our digital photography teacher taught us, our very first lab is what they call these little exercises, was called look and move. And this is something that I still use on absolutely every single shoot that I do. And look and move is this idea that, like with an iPhone, most people don't zoom when they take pictures. Mm-hmm. You know, they just use whatever set. So rather than moving the subject, so for example, like he would put a hand sanitizer bottle down and he'd be like, come up with 10, like take 10 cool pictures of this. And we wouldn't be allowed to touch the hand sanitizer bottle. And we wouldn't be allowed to zoom in our camera. So we literally just had to move around and find cool angles. And then after that, we loaded them into Photoshop and we could play around with the lighting and things like that. Or if there were smudges on the bottle, we could clean them up using some of the tools that we learned. But for me, I go on shoots now, and a lot of times I use prime lenses. And so if for those of you who don't know much about photography, a prime lens is simply a lens where you can't zoom. So it might be set at 50 millimeters or an 85 millimeter focal length. Well, for me, I use those partially because they're so much sharper oftentimes, but also because it challenges me to get new perspectives of people who I'm shooting. And oftentimes the photos end up way cooler and way more creative because I do that whole look and move thing. You know?
Yeah, that's a really good, simple and good tip. When people get involved in photography, you know, you want the newest gear, the best camera, all these lenses. But actually, sometimes when you get overwhelmed with all this gear, it's better to simplify it and like, yeah, just use that 50 millimeter or use a 28 millimeter, then go out, shoot with just that one lens and just see what you can get. Like, you don't need
absolutely
this big range zoom and trying to catch everything and anything. And I think it's better to learn the foundation of photography and just learning how to shoot.
I totally agree. And oftentimes, if early on, this is one of the biggest things I'll say too, is don't get overwhelmed by equipment. Because if you start thinking that the equipment is going to make you the better photographer, yes, there's going to become a time and there's a threshold piece where you're at a developed skill set where you truly need a new set of tools that will help you, you know, kind of enhance your work. But before that, if you don't have the foundations, if you don't understand look and move and you can't go out and take some basic cool images with your iPhone, then you can't pick up a DSLR. Because once you pick up a DSLR, you have to start understanding, you know, the triangle of exposure and all these other things that weren't a factor in just, the basic composition piece, which is, you know, which is what's being tested with the look and move lab, so to speak. But I think I told you, Darren, when I first started playing around with softboxes and using, and this is like, you know, two or three years ago, when I first started playing around with actually controlling my lighting, because I always hated using flash. I felt like it ruined pictures a lot of times. I went and I looked up a tutorial on how to build your own photo studio. And one of the guys, he basically took like one of those like $20 or $30 standing Walmart lamps. If you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, they're like the
size of a person in height. They're completely vertical, where you can just like basically adjust the top so that it's almost like a floodlight kind of in any direction. Well, I took one of those. I went to Kroger and I bought one of those like styrofoam coolers that people take to like picnics and stuff or baseball games. Got one of those. And I cut it out so that it fit the top of that lamp. And then I took a pillow sheet and then put it over that.
Oh, that's smart.
Like a diffuser. And that was my softbox, right? And I built two of those, and I did a photo shoot with them. And I told you there was someone in school at that time who was kind of like, everyone looked up to him in the photography world, and he commented on my Flickr shoot. It was like, hey, these shots are really cool. And at that moment, that was kind of like a little piece of motivation. I was like, oh, man, I've made it. Not really, but it got me thinking, wow, well, if I can do this with this garbage equipment that I just put together, and I'm making some really cool shots, and it really isn't all about the equipment, you know? It's about mm-hmm. being able to understand the lighting and the principles behind it. And then at that point, if I really do understand this, then I can go invest in some real softboxes later and imagine how much better my shots could be from there.
Yeah, it's more about knowing how to use what you have. And I know people will debate on lenses and the sharpness and all of these things, but the bottom line is the photo.
It's funny too, because when I think about like the first starter DSLR I had as opposed to what I'm working with now, if you can get to a point of max capacity where like you've maxed out how good you can get with a piece of equipment, mm-hmm, you'll mm-hmm. just be astonished when you upgrade to the next mm-hmm. piece, because you feel so much more like ready to use it, as opposed to, because there were times like when I first got my bottom line Nikon DSLR, like I was confused. There were so many things I didn't know how to use, and there's still things on my new DSLR that I don't know how to use because they're just not really relevant to what I'm doing. But once I got to a point where I pretty much maxed out all the functions, when I upgraded from a crop frame sensor to a full frame sensor, like I was astonished, because at that point I already understood depth of field and how to get that nice blur in a photo. So
and then
so
yeah, you appreciate it more mm-hmm. instead of going right there from the start.
Exactly. I was like, wow, I knew how to work to get to this, and now it's basically being given to mm-hmm. me. But with that, I could take it so much further, you know.
What are some of the struggles you face when you're first starting out that you think others might come across as well?
Sure. I think, first of all, the struggle, there are two that I can really think of. I would say confidence and clients, right? And I think that's something everyone's gone mm-hmm. through. I guess I'll hit on clients first. In terms of clients, that's something everyone's going to run into, because you got to get your name out there some way or another. Nowadays, there are so many ways to get work. I don't know if you've heard of Thumbtack. Thumbtack, I'd recommend to certain things. I'd say photography, for a starter photographer, Thumbtack is a great platform to start on. The good thing about Thumbtack compared to the others is that Thumbtack is like Upwork is more someone looking for like graphic design or UI, UX development software kind of jobs. A lot of things that can be done remotely. Thumbtack is more things that people need, like, you know, they need physically, right?
Photography. I haven't looked at it too deeply.
And I guess that's to an extent as well. But Thumbtack, for my uses at least, like a lot of times they cover everything. So, you know, there'll be plumbers, cleaners on there. And then they're also like photographers, or, you know, so you can go on and say, I'm good at wedding photography, sports photography, X photography, and, you know, bid on projects or whatever. But that's a good initial way to get your name out there. But the other thing I would say too, in terms of the confidence piece, is that I think we all struggle initially with that, because we're getting into something new that we haven't tried before. For me, it was photography. So I remember I was always afraid to do two things. I was always afraid to do senior pictures, because I knew how important senior pictures were to people. Mm-hmm. And I was always afraid that I would screw them up. Number two, I was afraid to do event photography, because with senior pictures, if you really, really like mess it up, you can go back and take another shoot, right? I mean, you do it for free and you can take another shoot. For an event, you can't do that. And this is something you probably face all the time. Yeah. You know, with videography, and I've told you this before, this is why I hire videographers, because I genuinely, the pressure is a lot to deal with for someone who's not a true videographer, that if that moment passes, it's gone, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm sure you face that all the time. But with photography, same thing for me. You know, I didn't want to miss a moment or not understand my camera enough that I couldn't compensate for changing, you know, settings and stuff, that I would screw that up. And for me, what really helped me overcome that barrier, as cliche as it sounds, was literally just going out and doing it, you know, and starting simple. And a lot of that had to do with experimenting. So I would get friends and I would say, okay, hey, do you want some cool like nowadays people love putting out on Instagram. So I'd be like, all right, you want some cool free Instagram photos that make you look really good? Come out with me for 2 hours and we'll take some pictures at, you know, Hoover Dam or wherever it was.
So that was also a way for you to build up your portfolio.
Absolutely. It was a way. That's where my portfolio came from initially, because that's something that whenever someone's hiring creatively, they're always going to want to look at a portfolio. You don't have to have a huge, vast portfolio created, but if you can have a few basic things just through going out and experimenting, yeah, you know, do it. So I would say that, and if someone asks you to do a project and you genuinely feel like you're a learner who can go and figure it out, or you have the resources through friends, like for me, I'll say yes to people when they ask about videography because I know I have Darren that I can go and sub it
well,
out
I
to.
I appreciate that.
Exactly. But, you know, I know I have the resources either way to get it done, that if I couldn't figure it out myself, I would have you on that other end, you know?
So I think that's a similar problem a lot of people in a creative field face. Is when you're in this field, yeah, you need a portfolio, but it's kind of like, how do you create a portfolio if you can't get work? And so that's kind of like what I struggled with as well, is it might not be the best way to go, but I think you do have to do some initial work for free or very low cost.
Yep.
Because you can't expect to charge a lot when you're first starting out. And
absolutely. Yeah. And you know what? I'm so glad you brought that up because I want to talk about that piece. That's something that gets so misconstrued and confused, and there's a blurred line between all that with the free work. So on that note, you know, from the very first website I did to the websites I'm doing right now, I'm charging over 10 times what I charged then, mm-hmm. right? Because I had to do something to get my foot in the door. But as creatives, when you're first starting out and you need that portfolio, sometimes you do have to bite the bullet. And what you have to think about is opportunity cost. If it's someone coming to you who you know they're just trying to get absolute dirt cheap work from you, and they're telling you, oh, I'm going to bring you so much exposure, and I'm going to, and they, you know, maybe hint about returning work, but you kind of know in the back of your head that it's not going to come, don't do it. Trust your gut on those things. Don't do it, because you're not going to get the return you want. Especially if the client is a pain in the ass and you know that they're going to give you trouble and just try to milk you. On the flip side, for me, I worked with a law firm that could not have been a better first client, and it's still a fantastic continuing client to me. But I knew from the start that they were going to be great, that they were going to send me extra work because they didn't have a creative person to come to. And that, honestly, they weren't really creatives themselves. So they were going to give me a lot of freedom to go and build something for them. So from that standpoint, I did it for super cheap. But to this day, you know Neil. Neil's a mutual friend of ours who is a marketing branding consultant. He goes around, and when he talks about my work to people, he still references that one as my best site, which I don't think it's my best site. But, you know, he loves the look and feel of it. And that was my very first project. So you do have to do some free or reduced work initially. But there comes a time where you're past that, and you have to be very careful of people asking you to do free things when you know that there might not be a whole lot of return that you can get out of it, or if you know that they have a reputation of going around and asking people for free stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I would advise anyone starting out to be very wary of that, but knowing that, but also not being arrogant and thinking, okay, I'm too good to do free work, because if you have no portfolio, you do have to bite the bullet sometimes in order to get that portfolio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So you start off in mainly photography, and then you got into web design.
Yep.
But for web design, how did you get into that?
Sure. So web design, I got into that really two ways. So through TEDx New Albany, we didn't really have a website. And also I helped start another nonprofit organization called Solar New Albany. You know, and with that, we didn't have a website either. So at that point for me, it was literally just going and Googling, okay, what's the best platform to build a website in? And, you know, everyone, like WordPress is the best platform probably for most people. But at that point in my time, you know, if you really want to build a beautiful WordPress site and you don't understand design a whole lot and you don't really know HTML and CSS, it's hard to build in WordPress initially. So I literally would start off in like Wix and would build people's sites that were really good. And for Wix, you have your desktop version, your mobile version. So it's not fully responsive, but it's good enough for what most people need. And so that's really how I started off. And then after that, I'd say, you know what, I want this extra function, but I know I can't do this function in Wix. So I'm going to go and play around in WordPress or just watch some tutorials or play around in Squarespace, because, you know, Squarespace is also fully responsive. And that's really just, that's kind of how it started. started expanding from there. But I also just think that and I think you know this too, like the new front door for any business is really their website, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Most of the time people don't even end up physically meeting with a business. They end up doing a lot of stuff remotely. And so I tell people, you know, you have to be able to market your services and sell yourself online. And that's actually to this day, probably what I enjoy doing the most. That maybe, or photography first, but I think it just came from the need in the organizations that I was serving in. But, you know, once I kind of got down to it and started watching tutorials, it came from there. And so much of it relates hand in hand to the, you know, graphic design work that mm-hmm. I was doing.
Mm-hmm. So getting back to the fact that you are a college student,
mm-hmm.
you do have your own business running all the time.
Yep.
How are you able to manage and juggle all your time?
Not a lot of sleep. Well, and on that note, though, I'll add in the not a lot of sleep part is because I'm working on another startup right now that is draining a lot of my time and energy aside from this Malik Media stuff. But in terms of managing all of it, I also am a first semester college student. So my course load was not ridiculously hard, but I was lucky to have met a lot of really good people that I could start subcontracting to and hiring to actually execute some of the projects that I could take on more of a project manager type of role and oversee, you know, creative director kind of role. So I've been fortunate to do that. But again, for someone starting off from scratch, if they're to do that in college, I would say, you know, you have to be really, really efficient with your time. I don't go out and really party because that's just not my thing personally. But again, I don't judge people who do or think that people shouldn't. You know, college is about the experience that you want it to be. Mm-hmm. For me, I just, like, I genuinely, and this sounds cheesy, the whole, like, you don't work a day in your life if you're doing what you love.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I really, really do enjoy, like, sitting down and building a website. Like, it's actually very fun to me. And I think you can probably sympathize mm-hmm. with that, or any creative could as well. But with that, you know, you have to be careful about, all right, how many organizations am I joining? Because, like, when I first started, I went to the career fair and I was like, oh my God, or not the career fair, the organization fair. I was like, I want to join Boxing Club. I want to join TEDx. I want to do all these other things. And before I even got to the university, like in the summer, I had interviewed for the finance chair position, had already taken that. So I had to be very wary about how many organizations I was joining. And, you know, almost initially, after I gave people my email addresses, to tell them from the start, you know, I'm involved in too much right now, but later on that could be something. So just being careful and remembering, okay, I have 4 years of college, or in my case with my program, 5 years of school, like none of this is going to go away. I can always do this later. But if I really want to start a business, you know, I need to take it easy, focus on my academics and my business, you know, so making those two things a priority.
So that kind of leads into my next question. So 5 years from now, you're graduated.
Yep.
Where do you see yourself, or what do you want to be doing at that time?
Oh, man. It's like, where does anyone see themselves? Damn, that's a hard question, Darren. Gosh, I got to think about that for a second, really. I definitely see my current company, Malik Media, continuing throughout that entire process and growing for sure. But I think I've told you about this. The real baby that I'm working on right now is another startup called MeLance.
Yeah, do you want to go into
details about that? Sure, I'll talk a little bit about MeLance for sure. So, because it totally relates to this audience of creatives who will be listening here. MeLance is really it's a platform that is going to make it easier for freelancers to get hired. Okay, and so that can be freelance creatives, it could be a freelance business consultant, whoever it might be. But it's also going to make it easier, and this is the biggest thing, for business people to communicate with creatives or freelancers in general. Because when you talk about Upwork or Fiverr or freelancer, 95% of the time people are, and that's just a random stat, but mm-hmm. most people are dissatisfied with their experiences on those platforms. And I think you've heard it before too.
Yeah, you know, I've heard about that.
It's ridiculously hard to get hired. Here in the United States, we're bidding and, you know, we're trying to bid for $20 an hour jobs, which are already absolute garbage for the mm-hmm. creative field. And we're being outbidded in India for people wanting to work for $3 an hour. I mean, so we don't win jobs, even though we spend hours writing quotes. And on top of that, when our clients receive 100 different proposals, they don't understand how to differentiate because they've never hired that skill set before.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times, nothing against the companies or people that need work done, but I think a lot of times they're just looking for the cheapest price, usually.
Exactly. And there's that, but there's also the genuine fact that they just don't know better, right? Yeah. So they'll see 20 different people who say, I'm a web designer, and they're like, okay, well, all their portfolios kind of look the same, or they don't really understand style and marketing, and you know the marketing behind a website. So they might look at something and be like, oh, this looks great, but they have no idea that it's not fully responsive. And that being in 2016, if you're a company wanting a website, you're going to want to pay to make it responsive up front. Otherwise, you're going to have to, you know, pay to get it redone down the road. So all of those things, basically, in our alpha version that we're going to be launching in early February, we're actually going through and we're starting with the design field specifically. So basically what we're going to do is walk every client through a guided step-by-step proposal process that helps them articulate exactly what they want in a way that the creative will understand it. So that, you know, for example, so if they want a logo done, showing them four different font types. So like a decorative font, a serif font, a sans serif font, or like a script font, and showing them what each of those four is and or four are and saying, okay, which of these four would you prefer? Or if you don't even want to get into that, you can check an option that says, leave it up to my designer.
Okay.
Because I can't think of how many times I've seen logo options, and literally I just see the font, and I'm like, oh, this is terrible. But if they had just asked the right questions up front, this would have never happened, right? And now they're going to have to pay to get it redone. So it's essentially making that communication piece easier in order to please the clients and in order to make it easier for us to get hired, because there's going to be a matchmaking algorithm that essentially provides the client with a short list of 3 to 5 freelancers who would be best to work with them. So that's coming later on, but I'll definitely shoot you some information once that comes out.
Yeah, because, sounds good. Yeah.
You know, we're really, and I say this because I started as a freelancer. My co-founder and CTO, John, he started as a freelancer, still is a freelancer. It's genuinely to help freelancers and to help our clients, because I think most freelancers would agree that right now, our clients, most importantly, are being underserved on these platforms, but we are being underserved as well. You know, there's the supply side exists. There are people who can fulfill these projects. The demand side exists. There are people who need them. And then the only way to bridge that gap right now is like Upwork. And everyone hates Upwork because it's a shitty platform and it's only built for, you know, one side of that market.
Do you see this through for the next 5 years, or is it just for like this first year and then you transition into something else, or how does this work?
Okay, so are you talking about my college or with MeLance?
Your MeLance and then how it's related to your courses.
Okay, I gotcha. So I'm in a startup accelerator program right now called the Founder Institute. And so I graduate from that program in mid-January. After that ends, the whole point of that accelerator program is really to go through from ideation to solid concept to market research to having your concept and your MVP done to the point where you could go out to investors or whatever it might be. But I think realistically, John and I are going to be at a point where rather than going and approaching investors right up front, we want to actually generate revenue and start gauging the client experience. So getting small businesses to use it and using a trusted network of freelancers to say, okay, as a creative, what would you want differently on this platform? And then going to business people and saying, as a business person, how can we better communicate with you on this platform and fix the things that Upwork and Freelancer and Fiverr are not fixing right now? And we're not looking for clients who are like, I want a logo for $5. If you want a logo for $5, like go to Fiverr, because that's you're not going to get something of quality. We're looking for people who, you know, have a decent budget to spend. They don't want to hire an ad agency to work on it, but they also don't want to get a piece of garbage, you know? So we're that in between.
So you're looking for companies that have an idea of what they want and they just need someone to do it.
Yeah. Or you know what? They might not even have an idea of what they want, but they have the money to pay for quality. And it doesn't have to be ad agency overhead. Okay. We're not looking for someone to pay
6 figures or anything.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know, on that note, we want to go out and really start we want to basically take this thing from MVP to a stage one product. And then at that point, we would go and start investing. And that process is really probably going to be the next 3 years of my and John's life.
Well, okay, that's great. I mean, I hope everything goes well.
Yeah, man.
Best of luck with that. I mean,
so do I, right?
Yeah. yeah, you have a lot on your plate up ahead. And
yeah, but I'm excited for yeah. it. You know, it's like you got to take that leap at some point, and this is kind of it, you know.
What is something that you know now that you wish you had known before when you're first starting out?
So this might not necessarily have saved me money or time, but just this idea that, like, almost every creative is on the same boat. Like, we have all started in close to the same exact spot, whether you're self-taught or whether you've gone to a university and a design or art school. We've all started at the same point, and if we've wanted work initially, we've had to build a portfolio for ourselves, or we've had to take risk. And just knowing that creativity is risk and that you have to put yourself out there if you want to grow. I would say I wish I knew that at that point, because I think I truly would have started my business earlier and actually started doing more work for money earlier if I had known that you need to go out and take risk. And that's what other creatives have done in order to start their businesses. But then, you know, from a standpoint of like actual solid tips, I would say knowing that there are so many resources available to you based on your situation. So like for me being in school, that like I get student discounts for the Creative Cloud. So rather than paying, I think like $60 or $70 a month, I pay like $20 or $30 a month.
For the full suite?
Yep, for the full suite, which is like really, really nice. So taking advantage of those opportunities or going to people you know who might be able to, you know, find you some kind of hookup or something like that. So just kind of working those things and then and reading to do research on those creative tips and hits and using things like Canva initially if you need to do things real quick. Mm-hmm. But I'd say, yeah, those are kind of the biggest tips. Definitely when I was starting out that I wish I had known now, or that I now wish I had known then.
Is there a tool, software, or gear that you can't live without?
So I think almost every creative would probably answer this similarly, is like the Creative Suite. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for a software to go to, don't try to cheap out and use something else, except for maybe in video production, some people might rather use like Final Cut, I think. Final Cut Pro.
Yeah, Final Cut, because Final Cut still has the, you know, you pay the one price and you own it, whereas yep. Adobe's now going the SaaS model.
Exactly, which is smart on their end. But mm-hmm. The beauty of it is, I would say, with the Creative Suite is you get literally every single program that Adobe makes. And I kid you not, my mind is blown like every single time I check the new list of apps with Adobe. I mean, I was looking at this thing the other day, and right now, if I ever want renderings, like if I'm doing product photography for a client and they want like a box rendered or something like that after I've done all the photos, I'll have to hire an industrial designer to do it, right? But Adobe's now launched this beta version of, it's called Project Felix, I think, where you can go.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
It's like literally brand new, and it's 2017, I think, and you can go and create like real renderings as like someone who's like, I don't know how to use CAD software, right? And that's what you would typically have to do. But my point being, Adobe literally has a program for photography, for layout, for video production, for audio, for web designers, for web developers. I mean, anything in that creative field, Adobe has covered. They're going to continue growing. They're going to continue improving their software and making it even better. So if you're going to start somewhere, start with the best, because that's the field that all creatives are going to work in. If someone's going to shoot you a file, they're going to shoot you probably an Illustrator file if you're doing design work. So I would say the Creative Suite, hands down,
yeah,
is the best way to go.
So what is a unique tip or hack that you can give everyone listening?
Sure. So I'm going to focus mine specifically on photography, because I think a lot of people start with photography. Some people don't, but that was kind of my first love creatively, I would say. I would advise anyone getting into photography to go to YouTube and look up a tutorial on how to use controlled lighting. And I would advise them to build some really
do-it-yourself
yes,
boxes.
Very DIY, build a soft box or something like that, so you can truly start to understand, you know, ISO, aperture, shutter speed, and how those three things really work together mm-hmm. as a photographer. Because when I started to do that, I can tell you that the quality of my shots, you know, it improved drastically. And then the other thing too is shoot in RAW, because a lot of, like, I know initially the whole idea of shooting in RAW, and real quick, I'll give a little background on this. You know, as a photographer, you can really either shoot in like JPEG or RAW. When you shoot in RAW, as opposed to JPEG. When you go and you edit your photos, you can almost edit things as if they're in real time. So you can change your exposure almost as if you were changing the aperture on your camera while you were taking the shot. I mean, whereas if you're going and photoshopping a JPEG, you're really just placing layers over mm-hmm. and trying to like basically paint and cover up a picture that's already been finished. So I would say shoot in RAW, because you'd be surprised on how much better. Like, obviously, composition is very important and understanding how to use your camera on the spot. But if you can shoot in RAW and do it relatively well, you can take your camera or your shots a whole step forward by understanding how to really edit in RAW.
Yeah, that's not to say you shouldn't capture the shot in the best setting that you can when you're taking it.
Yep.
But there are things you can adjust, like the white balance. I use a white balance a lot because
yep.
I just leave my camera on auto white balance.
Absolutely.
And then you can take the RAW file and adjust it in post, and then
yep.
it doesn't degrade the photo at all.
And like if you're shooting, like I shot in a church the other day, and sometimes you'll have a stained glass window behind everyone that completely washes out the people in front. And because you're shooting so many things at once, you don't have time to completely shift around your, you know, all of your settings. And so with that, if you kind of get like what might look like a semi-botched photo, well, you can go and in RAW, you can tone down the highlights and you can tone down some of the whites so that people aren't washed out in the back. And then you can make the foreground lighter and increase the exposure in the front. I mean, it's crazy what you can do.
Yeah, and there's more advanced techniques like burning and dodging. And
absolutely.
That's a whole other realm of stuff to get into.
Yep. And again, though, on that note, though, it's really not as hard as people think, you know? As soon as you get into it, you'll start to realize, and everyone has their own style. So I think people will start to pick that up kind of from the beginning.
And then I think mainly just get out there and shoot.
Absolutely. Get out there and shoot. That is the biggest tip I could give anyone who's looking to get into photography, mm-hmm. is get out and shoot and experiment, because you will not learn and you will not have the confidence to go do it for pay before you just get out and shoot. It can be for fun. It can be with a friend, a family member, but just get out and do it.
And another thing I just thought of, like, even if you're not paid to take pictures at that time, if you have some good pictures, you can actually sell it as stock or something.
Actually, that's a very... Yeah, I actually had a speaking engagement for a client at Innovate New Albany. So that's like a local business incubator, accelerator. And he was doing a talk there to a bunch of entrepreneurs. And so when I was done shooting his photos, and I knew he had enough to choose from, I went around and started shooting people in the crowd and making sure that I got some of the Innovate New Albany logos in there. And then when I was done, I edited some of them, slapped my watermark on them, and I went to Neil, the guy who runs Innovate New Albany, and said, hey, if you guys are looking for some stock photos, I can sell these back to you. And then ended up making like an extra, I don't know, $300.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Just from like, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 extra photos that I gave him a really good price on them, because I'm like, hey, I was going to have these anyway for my other client, so, and he doesn't need them, so, you know, might as well. But yeah, that's a great point. If you get good photos just by going out and experimenting, a lot of times people will buy them from you
mm-hmm.
anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was just thinking too, like whenever I go out and shoot, you know, usually you're thinking of shoot for this, a photo that you want that looks good. But at the same time, I always try to remember to have like, maybe I can use this just as a stock photo for my own self. Because, you know, when you do blog posts, just images for your website.
Absolutely.
You need these just surreal images or yep. just... You don't want people in there or something.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of times that, you know, that might not have been the purpose when you went out to shoot, but, you know, there's
you
a way to
use it later
use
on. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep.
So thanks for being here. Where can people find you or how can they reach you?
Sure. So they can definitely check out my website. It's www.malikmedia.co. And then also I'm on Twitter too. It's Samuel R. Malik. So SamuelRMalik. But yeah, thank you very much for having me, Darren. I appreciate it. It's been great.
No problem. And so lastly, before you go, how would you describe yourself in 3 or 4 words?
So I always kind of use 3 words behind my personal brand. It's leader, creator, and thinker. And on the leader piece, it's because I really do, I like to lead things with people, but I mean that from a teamwork standpoint too. So I'm not an overbearing authoritarian person. I'm very much a team player, but I have a vision and I like to fulfill it. And I like to speak up and voice my opinion. From a creator standpoint, just like you, I like to create new things. I like to challenge people to think of things in a different way. I like to challenge myself to think of things in a new way. And I think that leads directly into the thinker piece. I'm a problem solver. I like to strategize. I like getting challenging client jobs and thinking to myself, okay, you know, how can I come up with a new way to please this client or to make an audience see this thing in a different new light? Those are the kinds of things that interest me. So yeah, leader, creator, thinker. You'll see that in my LinkedIn bio.
Well, again, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you, Darren.
I appreciate you coming by, and best of luck to you in the future.
Thank you. You as well.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Pursuit Podcast. Find us online at creativepursuit.co. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you enjoyed the show, we would greatly appreciate your review. It only takes a few minutes, but it really helps support the show and keep it going. Until next time, we encourage you to start pursuing your creative passion today.